Yeah, sounds good. So we have actually two stories that kind of relate to this in this week's show. The next one, the other one we'll cover later. But there's a camp where many homeless people are staying in a public park. And City of Regina has set out a task force to make sure that everybody is being safe and everybody is kind of following whatever safety rules, making sure there's not a bunch of fire hazards and whatnot happening.
Yeah.
So reading this article, there's a statement: the city does not endorse or support a tent city on public property. We do, however, have an obligation to keep people safe in the encampment as well as the surrounding neighborhoods, from Mayor Sandra Masters. And I understand, like, that there's this thing that cities have to do, that people in power have to do, where they say, well, we don't endorse this homeless encampment. But unless you have, like, a situation where all of these people aren't homeless, then you're going to have camps, right?
Exactly.
So I don't know. I appreciate that the goal here is to keep everybody safe and make sure there's nothing bad happening. But I, as usual, I'm concerned that there's police involved in this task force. And I kind of feel like it should be mostly social services and fire department.
Yeah, 100%.
But that's, you know, I guess.
I'm in agreement with you on that. I think this goes back to issues we've talked about so many times on that.
Yeah.
Like, it is an old timey expression that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And considering how old timey of an expression it is, it's unfortunate that old timers don't embrace it more. As someone who is a money person, who follows economics and finance and return on investment statistics and just dollars and cents and hard numbers, it drives me up the wall that housing first initiatives for dealing with the unhoused is not just universal. Because we know with certainty that it saves money in the long run. It is cheaper to provide housing. And don't give a fuck about the whole deserve it, not deserve it, drugs, not drugs. Like, just do it. Yeah, don't fucking care about who deserves it, in quotation marks.
Yeah, that's right.
Because again, if you're a cold-hearted asshole, it's still better to do that than dealing with the after effects of not. We know it is more expensive to deal with the social cost of homelessness than just providing housing. There's not a lot of social issues where the money part of it is black and white. Like, there are some.
With housing, it is.
This is one where it is. We know it is. Yeah. And we know human beings, like, human beings are amazing. Like, at the core, every person has the capacity for doing some pretty incredible, amazing things. Even if you're talking about people with addictions or disabilities or, like, regardless, people have the potential for just doing amazing, incredible things. And society benefits from their ability to do them. Most people can't do incredible, amazing things if they don't have a home to live in.
Yeah, that's right.
We provide, again, even 100% within a purely capitalist framework. So, like, let's not even worry about socialism, communism, anarchism. Sure. Like, let's put all of that aside. Let's, from a purely fucking hardcore capitalism is the be all and end all, the light in the sky way of looking at things. Providing housing allows people to be better consumers, to be better laborers, to be better participants in a civil society. You get someone on their feet. And we know, again, there's going to be, you know, let's say there are people who abuse the system and don't work. Like, they then still will provide consumerism. Like, they will feed the consumerism even if they're not providing labor. But that's still the rarity. And once someone has a place to have a shower, to have clean clothes, to feel safe so that their belongings are not at constant threat of being stolen or lost or taken, then they can go out and get work. Because most people do, like, no one wants to have a job, but most people want to be productive. And people will find ways of being productive when they are given the opportunity to. And again, in the capitalist society we have, that will often be, or almost always be, through gainful employment. And then that money turn around to get spent, because we know people who are struggling to get by spend every penny they earn.
That's right.
Are more likely to do that when they feel safe and secure, because they have housing to come back to.
Yeah.
And people, if we do a housing first approach, we know most people do not stay in that housing forever. They want to have their own place, whether it's renting or buying or whatnot, right? So this is still not something where we're setting up a situation where someone's going to, quote unquote, live on the government teat forever. Anyways,
and like you say, even if they did, they still feed into the economy and the society in various ways because they're living in a house and have security.
Exactly.
So,
and like that is the more long-term solution to this. I think this is a common sense. I've talked about it before. We've sort of beaten that to death before. But dealing with the current situation, I'm glad. Like, again, police involvement, but the fact that it's not getting busted up, the fact that it's being allowed to continue, that they're not bringing in cops to arrest everyone or sweep the park, things like that. I think you're going to see probably more of that come winter.
Yeah,
because
that's right.
What the city really doesn't want to have happen is someone dying of exposure. And I don't want that either, right? I don't, like, we need to come up with a solution that doesn't involve people freezing to death.
Yeah, that's right.
And a lot of those tents are not sufficient.
That's right.
For people to not freeze to death.
Based on this article, there is some vacancies within social housing and at shelters. Obviously, there's reasons, lots of reasons why people might not access those services. As a last resort, she said, Mayor Masters said that the province does have the capacity to offer hotel rooms for people who need a place to stay, though I suspect that's not happening a whole lot.
But again, I can't beat the dead horse. If you're paying for hotel rooms, it's a hell of a lot easier to just pay for housing.
I think it was 2017, somewhere in there. There was a Housing First program going on. I think, I'm not sure if it ended or what the situation, how it ended or what, but for more information on that, a person can access, there's a podcast, Queen City Investment Bureau or Improvement Bureau with Paul Deschain. they just did a replay of a 2017 interview regarding that. So
perfect.
It's,
I'll stop talking about that then and let people who know even more about it than me talk about it and encourage people to go listen to that. But I hope we don't see this a repeat of what we saw, you know, a decade ago when there was the Occupy protests in Tent City in town and it ended with police coming in and arresting people and sweeping the park and, abusing park bylaws to.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's a bylaw, right? Like, it's frustrating because the bylaws are often inconsistently applied.
Absolutely.
And I think we've talked about this on the show before, is where they're like, these rules.
Everything is illegal in a park in Regina. There is nothing that is legal. It is barely possible to set foot in a park in Regina without violating some sort of bylaw. They've basically gone through and made every possible activity you could do in a park illegal and then just allow selective enforcement. So
yeah.
If I go to a park with my kid and throw a baseball around, I'm probably not going to be asked to leave.
Right.
But technically that's violating a park bylaw.
Right.
Because you're not allowed to throw objects in parks in Regina.
What is a park even for, actually?
You're not allowed to throw objects in parks. Like when the Occupy protests were busted up, I looked at the bylaw and I actually sent messages to the city manager and like asked for clarification. And the answer literally came back was it depends who's asking on what counts as an object that's illegal to throw. And so if you're saying it depends who's asking, then
yeah. That tells you that it's
that tells whoever you what you the need cop, to know, right? Yeah. And you're not allowed to be in a park after, you know, after a certain time. I can't remember if it's 11 o'clock or midnight. Right. So you're not allowed to be in a park at night. Yeah. You're not allowed to prearrange meeting in a park.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. For an activity. You can just say, hey, I want to meet you there. But if it's any sort of activity, you're not allowed to prearrange.
Oh, we can't plan to go and throw a Frisbee back and
forth. Correct. Well, you couldn't throw the Frisbee anyways. But even if it was like a game of hide and seek where there's nothing being thrown, if a bunch of kids all message each other and say, hey, let's go to the park and play hide and seek, that is a violation.
Interesting.
And like some of the stuff you can only do with a permit. Some of the stuff you just can never do. But again, so yes, the park, the tent city violate some of those bylaws, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
But again, everyone who uses Regina Parks violates those bylaws. So they're noticeable in the lack of enforcement rather than the enforcement. So
yeah.
Saying, oh, well, it's a violation of the law and that's why we have to, quote unquote, just shut it down is just an excuse. So
yeah. But. So this is, I guess, a little bit old. It came out on the 13th, which is 10 days or 11 days ago. The Sask NDP was concerned, says lack of request for federal healthcare workers from the province is baffling. I think we covered this a little bit in our previous episode.
Yeah.
Because it's confusing to me as well, right? Like we should have been asking for help.
Yep.
So I don't know. There's not much to say within this actual article. One of the things that I was thinking, though, is Scott Moe had a tweet not long after this where he wanted to assure us that as citizens of the province that it is not his pride that is getting in the way of requesting help.
Right.
So it's some other thing that we have no idea what his reasoning is, but it's not his pride that is getting
in the good. Way.
Yeah,
that's probably not true. But so, like, I guess, like, is it pride? Is political optics the same thing as pride? I don't know. I guess it's slightly different, right?
Yeah.
Because we seem to see, like, and I think we talk about this a couple other stories we go into this, but like, there's been two different circumstances now where it seems like what has happened is the province has asked for outside help. They get it. But as soon as the media finds out that we've asked for outside help and are going to get it, all of a sudden the province backpedals and says, oh, no, never mind. We don't actually need it.
Yeah.
Or don't want it. No, we don't need to ship people out to Ontario for hospital beds. And we don't need the federal government coming in.
Yeah, it certainly seems like a pride to me. Yeah. But like you say, where's the line between political optics and pride, I guess?
Yeah. And yeah, it sucks that you have to admit you need help, but then do the behaviors that put you in a spot where you don't need help.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Yeah. I probably all of us as grown-ups at some point in our lives have made a mistake and found ourselves in a situation where we were overwhelmed. I don't think I've met a single human being who hasn't had that happen to them at some point. And sometimes there are consequences to that. And if we've let other people down, we need to face those consequences. I think the Sask Party are rightly in that situation where they have made mistakes, let people down. And I think, you know, obviously there should be electoral consequences for that. However, even with all of that said, as grown-ups, when we make mistakes and have let people down and are facing consequences, sometimes we have to ask for help to deal with those consequences.
Yeah.
And the only thing that refusing help does is make the consequences worse.
Yeah. It's I think we are certainly facing some consequences as a province right now. I don't know if the Sask Party or our premier Mo are actually going to face any consequences of their own, but I suppose we'll see.
We will see. I think it's also important to note that the actions whose consequences we are currently facing are twofold. Like, the response to COVID is certainly part of it. Like, absolutely, right. 100%. They need to be held accountable for their reactions to COVID, both implicit and explicit. The explicit in, as far as how they've managed different rules and guidelines as far as social distancing, mask wearing, vaccines, all of that. As far as government policy on things, like there are some hard and fast rules that they've done that need to be looked at. But also, again, the implicit around how they have framed the conversation around aspects of their base that are anti-vax and anti-mask. How they have, I think there's an accountability that needs to be in place for not coming out and saying, I don't care if you are our natural base. This is not a political issue. There needs to be some accountability for turning a public health crisis into a bizarre partisan issue. Like, partisanship is going to come in no matter what. Comes into play in politics.
Yeah.
There should be debate and opposition and back and forth around tactics and how vaccines were distributed and the distribution centers are and timing and how do you, where are the lines between social distancing and mask wearing and how do we communicate that and what role is placed on bureaucracy within the civil bureaucracy and public health and where the bureaucracy of the healthcare system itself. Those are all the types of things that should be getting discussed because we are supposed to have robust debate in a parliamentary system where the government sort of does their best approach. Opposition parties come in and say, okay, have you thought of this? Why aren't you doing it this way? Try and poke holes in the plan in order to come to a better solution overall.
Yeah.
But the debate shouldn't be whether the worst global pandemic in 100 years should be treated seriously.
Right. Or whether it's happening, right? Like, there's still people out there that are arguing that it isn't even happening. And that also seems to have like that partisan bent to it. It's one team that says that this isn't a real thing.
Yeah.
So,
and not that there aren't left-leaning people who aren't.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
On team conspiracy theory. But that seems, again, the left is not courting that fringe within them. I don't see Ryan Miley courting the the David Wolf crowd or the
Gwyneth
Paltrow crowd, right? The left wing, let's heal this through crystals and moonbeams crowd.
Not to get it too big a picture, but those people currently are finding their home among the right because of this vaccine mandates, COVID conspiracy nonsense.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. So. Anyways, I think there needs to be, whether it's pride or what, there needs to be some accountability for the both explicit and implicit actions that have led to this being worse. The other part of it too, the other aspect of accountability needs to be around everything that's been done for the last couple decades, and the NDP of the 90s also need to be somewhat accountable for this. But I would say, none of them are in office anymore, so it's somewhat moot. I'm not going to vote for Lauren Calvert or Roy Romano in any coming election because they're not running.
It's not even a thing.
It's not even a thing, right? But the fact that our healthcare system was strained to the point of operating on a shoestring. The fact that we operated it in such a degree that anything that goes wrong causes catastrophe. That's not how you should run anything, let alone a healthcare system.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's, you know, I've used this example before. If someone is like ends up being an hour late from meeting you, and they say, oh, it's because of traffic or because of this, that, and the other thing, you know that there was more to it than that. You know they were probably going to be 15 minutes late if nothing went wrong. And right. Then when things go wrong, they're an hour late. I think that's sort of the situation we find ourselves in, both Saskatchewan and Alberta, right. Where things were operated in such an extent that we'd be okay, but just barely, if everything goes right.
Yeah.
So obviously this last year and a half, everything has not gone right.
And then when everything goes wrong,
You're hooped because you don't have that cushion. You don't have that, necessary redundancy.
Yeah. And I mean, not to reiterate what everybody already knows, but that failing and that continuation of that failing has cost people lives.
Yeah. 100%. So.
This came out on the 16th. Saskatchewan Liberals set to elect a new leader. There was only one person running.
Yeah.
Jeff Walters, I assume at this point, is the new leader of the Saskatchewan Liberal Party.
I love the voting will be conducted by a majority vote on a ranked ballot. The only nominee on ballot is.
Yes.
I honestly don't understand the existence of this political party anymore.
No, it there's zero point.
I don't understand their existence. I really, really don't. And I say this as someone who has voted provincially for the Liberals of the past. I when they still had MLAs, I did vote Liberal in an election or two.
That's quite a while since
that happened. It's been quite a while. We're going back many a year. The NDP were forming the government when I voted Liberal. We'll put it that way. So I understand kind of the desire to have the existence of a third option.
Well, particularly if that's how you identify, right? Yeah. For the small contingent of people who identify as Saskatchewan Liberals, that's they're really probably like, yay, we have a new leader. Let's push to get somebody in office. But
it's more like I've attended the AGM of the Liberals in the last couple of years. There was an issue that we were invited to speak on. So I attended it in order to speak on an issue I was asked to be there for. And it was the weirdest political event I have been to in my life.
Is that right?
It did not feel like a political convention in any way, shape, or form. It felt like Model UN. Like it felt like people dressing up and LARPing as politics. And I like LARP. Only partially an insult, but it wasn't what they thought it was, and I don't see, and maybe this is an indictment of the system rather than the Saskatchewan Liberals in that, a grassroots movement can't take hold, but they just don't have the infrastructure to be anything other than people sort of gathering together. The Green Party certainly is a stronger.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was just thinking. Like, I think, and maybe it's partially my bias speaking here, but I think that in our current political age or climate, we, in order to gain ground against, say, a very strong conservative movement in Saskatchewan, I think you need a stronger left movement. You don't need a liberal movement, right? Centrist. Nobody's going centrist, right?
Well, you know what? I don't even necessarily agree on that. I think you could get a centrist movement. This just isn't it. right. I don't necessarily think that, because I think you could probably make a case for the fact that there are that there is the ability to draw support away from the Sask Party by positioning yourself between the NDP and the Sask Party.
Just maybe not under the label of Liberals.
Yeah, probably not under the label of Liberals and not within the infrastructure that organization currently has.
Right, right.
It doesn't have enough new energy for a new party.
Yeah.
Because you need enthusiasm, you need energy, you need the ability to take on new ideas. And the infrastructure of the Liberal Party in Saskatchewan will treat any new idea with the response of, well, that's not how we've always done things. And
which isn't going to work.
When you're getting 0.something% of a, like, when you're getting a fraction of 1% of the vote, the way you've always done things is probably not the way you want to
proceed. It's not the way to do it. So. Yeah. We actually talked longer on that than I expected.
Yeah. Sorry. That was me ranting as a former Liberal and a very disillusioned.
Sask sought ICU help from American states before asking the federal government. Remember, it's not pride related.
No.
So the Saskatchewan scoured North America for staff before asking the federal government to relieve hospitals overburdened by COVID-19. Yeah, so I guess they went out looking for staff and help in other places, which I don't want to say like this is necessarily a bad thing, but the idea that you do this before going to the federal government or without ever going to the federal government seems really bizarre to me.
Well, and also approaching places that are more overwhelmed by COVID than we are seems like a weird approach.
Yeah,
because like Saskatchewan has the lowest vaccination rate. Saskatchewan and Alberta seem to be going back and forth and alternating who's in last place. But sort of we seem to be the two worst provinces in the country around vaccination rates as well as infection and death. Like pretty much all of the bad statistics you could have, Saskatchewan and Alberta seem to be going back and forth as far as regions within Canada. We're still better than the best of the US.
Like, so why
we still need to put this in or at least better than like 90%. There may be one or two states that are performing better than Saskatchewan.
Some places that are particularly good.
I don't even think there are, though. I remember seeing like the highest vaccination rates, like the best vaccination rates in the U.S. for fully vaccinated were still worse than Saskatchewan, if my memory serves correctly. I'd have to look it up to know for sure. But and like the places we're looking, like Montana, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, Michigan, like they ain't them. Like those aren't even the best. So they are also overwhelmed. Yeah. Like, how do we think that they are going to say yes to lending help? I don't know. It just seemed, like a very weird.
It's a weird pitch, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I don't want to pretend that the other provinces aren't going to need their people either, or the federal government isn't already, you know, strained as well. Yeah, like you say, like Saskatchewan and Alberta we're doing the worst. And
well, and even like Ontario offered, and it's again, there's that weird back and forth that it seemed like we were going to ship people out. And then at the last minute, we decided we weren't going to ship people to Ontario and had to go back to canceling heart surgery and cancer treatment in Saskatchewan because there's no longer room because we weren't going to ship them out anymore. Again, not because of pride, apparently. But like the federal government was offering help, and the federal government like isn't already like this isn't like we're taking Ontario beds away from Ontario people or Ontario nurses or Manitoba nurses or whatnot away from Ontario, Manitoba. Like, I have a family member who's in the Canadian Armed Forces, and at the beginning of COVID was stationed in Quebec helping with COVID relief as part of. Like he's a medic, so like an army medic, and he did COVID relief as one of his duties. Like we have people within the armed forces who can do that. They're trained to do that. That's part of their job. The federal government offered to send them here, and we kept saying no. And then finally when we said yes and it got announced, then we backtracked on that again because there was that weird tweet from Mo, and I don't know if we have that in the where he came back after Trudeau basically said, "Yeah, Saskatchewan has accepted our help. We're sending people out," and then Mo said, "Oh, don't believe it if you don't hear it directly from us."
Oh yeah, that's right.
That was that weird, but like,
why that's not? The like, weirdest thing.
That was
to
the
say.
Weirdest tweet of the week. So
Coming from the prime minister, you can't believe it.
Yeah.
According to our premier.
Yeah. Unless you hear it from him directly. But like, then we did hear it from him directly.
Right.
So I don't get it. But also, again, looking to the U.S. before, like, if it's not pride, then I'm really puzzled. If it's not pride or political optics, then I really do want to find out what the heck it is, because it's something bizarre.
Saskatoon councillors looking into writing their own bylaw on COVID-19 gathering limits. The city asked province for extra gathering limits and was officially refused.
This is the weirdest title for a headline. I'm just going to pause, yeah, like, off topic for a second on freaking copy editing for a moment. Don't write bylines that read like the opposite of what they actually are. Because when I first read this story, I'm like, oh, why is Saskatoon wanting to be able to have larger gatherings? And no, it's the exact opposite. They want to force gatherings to be smaller. I'm like, they're not asking for exemptions. They're not asking for extra gathering. They're asking for smaller gatherings, smaller, additional restrictions that they want to be able to place.
But it is not clear.
No, from the, just that's a pet peeve part of this story, is just bad copy editing. The story itself, again, I think this is a vent and rant I have been on multiple times since. I think I ranted about something similar on our very, very first podcast a year ago. How conservatives talk the talk about small government and they don't like grassroots, local should be in charge. So provincial shouldn't overrule local and federal shouldn't override provincial and allow like the libertarian ideal and rallying cry is that things should be decided at local levels. But then they never actually walk the walk, right? As soon as a city or a municipality says, okay, then we would like to place this extra restriction for our city.
Yeah. The province says, hey, no, you can't do that.
Yeah. So I drives me nuts. And I don't understand what the province has. Like, I don't understand where the province's rationale on this is. It seems like a very bizarre hill to die on.
I was talking to my partner the other day about this, because it seems like the same people who are currently and have been through the entire pandemic telling us we have to get back to normal, we have to open up, we have to have everything the same as it always was, we have to do this, we can't restrict things because of the economy or whatever the reasoning was, are also ignoring the fact that no restrictions makes it so that we cannot possibly go back to a normal way of doing things.
Yeah.
It the desire to be normal and ignore the pandemic is making the pandemic hurt us more and causing us more economic strain.
Yep. 100%. And
I'm as excited for the end of capitalism as any other hardcore leftist, but I don't want to see a bunch of people die doing it.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Like, we're seeing this collapse. The system is collapsing in on itself because of this desire to perpetuate it throughout the death.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. just my observation, I guess. I'm not really making a good point of it.
Yeah, no. And I think you're right. And it's a bizarre conundrum. And I think, again, around this specific one, I'm so frustrated. I'm additionally frustrated because one of the things that happens so, so often is you have, when you said left, right, if you have people in urban environments who say, hey, this is a need that we have. And you have people in rural environments saying, oh, well, that's only an urban need. We don't need that where we are. There's no need to make this a national thing or a provincial thing. You know, if Regina wants to do it, let Regina do it. Or on a national, if Toronto needs this, let Toronto do it for themselves.
Absolutely. You know, let them do it.
but then you can't come along and say, oh, well, they shouldn't be allowed to do it themselves either. I would love it if Saskatoon and Regina didn't need to have their city councils vote for added restrictions and have the province come in and quash them. Because what Saskatoon is trying to do now is the same as what Regina tried to do a year ago when the province overruled them.
Yeah.
I would love it if they didn't have to do that. And just the province put those rules in place.
Yeah.
Like that would be even better if we just had provincial-wide rules that kept people safe. That would be even better than the cities having to do it on their own.
But the province can't do that because their rural voters don't want that.
And again, I've said this on a number of issues. Gun control has probably been, again, the biggest one for years and years, where people say, oh, well, all those Ontario folk don't understand what it's like living in rural Saskatchewan.
Right.
But then you still have, you know, governments crushing city bylaws in Toronto, whether right. it be the federal government when Harper was in charge, or the provincial government out there with Ford in charge now. But it seems like when individual municipalities want to be more left-wing and do the left-wing type things that they were elected to do in fairly convincing and significant mandates, that's when conservative governments step in and say, oh, well, no, we don't actually believe in governing at the local level.
And like you said, and in a way, because it's a municipality, it's that area, it doesn't hurt the people that don't want the blanket rule applied to them from outside the area. So why are you crushing Toronto's gun law if it doesn't matter? If it, you know, it's not going to affect the Saskatchewan conservative guy. Yeah. So,
and same with the Regina COVID restrictions and Saskatoon COVID restrictions. Like, if Saskatoon places added restrictions on what businesses can be open in Saskatoon, that doesn't affect some guy in North Battleford who thinks that COVID is just fine and dandy and wants to go around licking doorknobs, right? Like,
right.
That doesn't affect him unless he comes into Saskatoon and then fucking.
And he's got to follow the rules.
Yeah. And just like if someone from Saskatoon goes to North Battleford, they need to accept that that won't have those added restrictions in.
Yeah.
And I'm not picking on North Battleford in particular. I'm just thinking of, there's a first rural-esque city that jumped to mind, but
yeah,
wherever you want to look at it.
We've got another Camp Marjorie
story.
So,
yeah. And I think we talked about this largely before. I don't know. We need to, again, it's just a different take on it from the different perspective a few days later, but the camp looks like it needs to grow just because of the people there. They fenced off some area that's specifically for residents of the area.
Right.
The camp is talking about they are going to need to expand into it, and they're looking and talking to the fire department. So I am glad that everything is remaining civil, that for now, at least, the city is not being confrontational about it. So hopefully that can continue.
A lot of times, a person will end up really happy with, say, a more progressive city council, but then when it comes to the issue of homelessness or homeless encampments, they will be as reactionary as any other conservative within the system. And so far, the city of Regina is doing the right thing and not pushing these people out of this camp. So good work, City of Regina. Keep doing that.
Yeah. Dr. Shahab talking about the modeling and what we can expect.
Yeah. He was emotional at a press conference where he's talking about what's happening and what the current data modeling is going to shows. And it's not looking good. He said, at this rate, the healthcare system will not return to sustainable levels until March of 2022. So,
6 more months. Yeah. And that's at this rate. That's not even assuming things get worse.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. So I don't know. Get your vaccine, people, please.
Yeah, hopefully, and again, hopefully it gets approved for ages 5 to 11 soon.
I heard that there's some data coming out now that it could be coming soon. So
yeah, they just had the results of one of the biggest trials came back. It's being used by anti-vaxxers very disingenuously.
Of course.
my favorite, and this one just is fucking so stupid, but they're using this trial to show the vaccine causes infertility.
In 5 to 12-year-olds?
They don't bother to mention that part. what they say is the most recent trial shows that out of however many thousand people were in it, not a single person became pregnant or impregnated someone during the entire length of the trial. But they leave out that it was a trial for 5 to 11-year-olds.
Right. So the pregnancy numbers from 5 to 12-year-olds should be pretty low anyway. Right?
I would hope so.
Like
But again, it's being used very, very disingenuously. But the long and the short of it is the trial on 5 to 11-year-olds showed virtually no side effects, some arm soreness. There were a couple other minor issues. But again, slightly elevated compared to the control group of placebo. But none of them are serious, like no blood clotting, nothing like that. It's all...
And that's just basically it's the same thing, just a slightly with a lower dose, right?
Yeah, and it's just because the lower dose is because we know amongst kids they have a more active immune response. So it's different than normal drugs. So like on a normal drug, your dosage is often based on the weight, right? Like a larger person needs a larger dose, and with vaccines, it has nothing to do with the size of the weight. It's all to do with how active the vaccine dose, vaccine response is. It's one of the reasons why they were thinking right off the start that elderly folks would have needed a stronger dose, even though their body weight is often smaller. They need a stronger dose because the immune response isn't as strong.
That would make sense.
But again, for kids, the children have, you know, an immune response on overdrive, which is part of why this virus hasn't hit them as hard to begin with. But anyways, yeah, that's a smaller dose. Hopefully that's going to solve a lot of these issues.
Yeah, hopefully. SASC NDP MLA calls for the province to halt a sale of Crown lands, lands essential for First Nations, Métis hunters, trappers, and trappers exercising treaty rights. This is Betty Nippy Albright. Nippy? I apologize if that's incorrect. Opposition MLA who wants the province to stop selling Crown land. By and large, the land that's been has been sold that we've covered hasn't technically been treaty land. Like it isn't land that the government has owned, but they treat it as though it's theirs despite its unceded status. So that's troubling, but
yeah, there are issues with the sale of Crown land above and beyond this. Talked about in the past how austerity is like selling the car that you need to drive to work.
And then they keep,
if you're constantly selling resources that are collectively owned by the province in order to make your deficit look less bad, that's still a deficit.
Yeah. And you can't create more land.
Yeah. Like if you're spending more money than you earn and you sell your house to address that shortfall, you're not really having a profit that year. Like you're still in all reality, you're still operating at a deficit.
Yeah.
And same sort of thing is if the province is having to sell off its own land in order
more
to make deficit look
more than 8,000 acres.
Yeah.
So,
Add on to that, the fact that it now, removes the hunting and fishing territory that is supposed to remain available to, indigenous peoples.
Yeah.
And add into that, indigenous communities are by law and by treaty supposed to have first buyer's rights to any Crown land that's up for sale, and that's being violated.
Yeah. Stop selling the land.
And if you are selling the land, follow the fucking law and allow buyer's first right of refusal to indigenous groups. This is that thing where, again, I'm going to take a step back and put on my cold-hearted asshole hat. So let's take away right and wrong for a moment, because again, I think it's morally wrong what they're doing. But let's even take that off the table for a moment. As a Saskatchewan taxpayer, because we always love talking about the taxpayer,
right.
As a Saskatchewan taxpayer, I don't want the government breaking the law when they sell shit, because that's going to be expensive for me in 10 years.
Yeah, because they're going to get sued.
They're going to get sued.
Yeah.
And you know what's going to happen is they're going to fight it and fight it and fight it. And the cost of fighting it is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally, at some point, a left-wing government is going to be elected into office. And they're going to look at the numbers and go, we can keep fighting this, and it's going to cost us double or triple what it can cost us now. So we might as well pay it now. And all of the conservatives are going to come out of the woodwork and be like, oh, the NDP giving money to Indigenous people, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Because that's what they do. But ignoring the fact that in 10 years from now, when all of the conservatives are bitching and moaning about this money being given to Indigenous groups because of a settlement that they had to make with some left-wing government, I want them all to remember that it was today. Like, it was the sale of these first lands in violation of the law and in violation of treaties. That is what is costing that money 10 years from
now. That's right.
So
be aware.
Be aware. Like, yes, it is also, you know, Nippy Albright talks about it being a slap in the face. And it is. 100% it is. This is a slight to Indigenous people that flies in the face of reconciliation. And that should be a bigger part of this story. But again, even aside from that, it's just, again, dollars and cents means this is stupid in the long run.
All right. Last story of the night. Back to COVID.
Yeah. And this is one we've referenced a couple times.
Yeah.
Throughout.
The minister says the pandemic help, including military support, is approved for Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
And Minister Bill Blair says the federal government has approved a request for pandemic aid in Saskatchewan, which includes military support. So there we are. We have military support coming because we are beyond our own capabilities at this point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Which, yeah, thank for finally saying yes.
Yeah.
The tweet from Mo on, I believe it was Monday, but when was this? This was Saturday. So this was just, So the tweet from Mo a couple days before this, or 5 days before this, saying, oh, well, don't believe it until I say so, just is weird and petty. And I don't, this week seems to be a lot of me saying, I don't understand. And I don't know if that's entirely true, because I kind of do understand. I think I say I don't understand because what I really want what I understand to be wrong.
Just scrolling through Scott Moe's Twitter feed, he shares some things that I would consider red flags. Okay, Financial Post. Okay, I get some people are into Financial Post.
Yeah.
But it's of course oil related. Then he's got this article from pipelineonline.ca. It seems, I don't know. That seems like a sketchy website to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Lobbyist, if nothing. No. Okay. To be fair, if the NDP shared something from Greenpeace, we probably would also be, we wouldn't be.
Well, in general, I would. Yeah. In general, people on the left would be more amenable to that.
Yeah.
I personally am a little skeptical of Greenpeace because I've seen some sketchy stuff. But
sure. Lobbying people are often less skeptical of lobbying groups that align with their own perspective.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And we've talked about that, too. You know, whenever we share something by Press Progress, we try and point out that that's what we're doing at the beginning.
Yes, that's so, right. Yeah. We always try and mention that we know that our right-wing friends are going to be skeptical of this article.
I'm skeptical of the article when it's Press Progress. I don't necessarily think it's always going to be wrong.
Right. But you know that it has a slant. It has
Sure. Just like when the National Post shares something, right? Like if I'm reading a National Post article, I know there's going to be an angle.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean the facts they report are wrong.
Right.
Same with Press Progress. And in both cases, it's like, what are the facts and what of this is you spinning? And there's a certain degree of media literacy that has to come into it either way.
Yeah, that's like, right.
Oh, this is what that actually meant. And this is how you're spinning it. And yeah, an explicitly oil pipeline lobbying group's website.
Yeah. Granted, it's not as sketchy as some of the websites I've seen conservatives share.
Sure. Where
it's,
so. I also think to some degree, we kind of do have to hold parties that are in power slightly more accountable than ones that are not.
Yeah.
I think that comes into play as well. So, that might be a little more okay if they were an opposition party. I don't know.
Just scrolling through his feed, I see at least 4 or 5 articles from Pipeline Online. Okay. So this is
fair.
So you can pretty much tell where he sits on this.
We all know that a good 50% of the SASC party cabinet will end up in jobs working for an oil company when they're done in office. That is just inevitable, right? There's very little surprise when that happens.
It will be a shock if Scott Moe works for Greenpeace.
They are sharing the social media of their future employer.
Exactly. Yep. That's right. All right. We better get going here because you got an important project thing going on, presentation.
Yes. I will move to my other life where I talk about kinky shit and sex and pride. And
oh, awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. I get to talk about the history of kink at Pride in Western Canada.
That's fantastic.
Take off the tie and put on my leathers.
Nice. All right.
Dual life.
Dual life. Yeah. You can find us at anchor.fm/from many peoples. You can find our Twitter at skpoliticspod. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/from many peoples strength pod. And you can contact us through Gmail at frommanypeoples@gmail.com and give us money if you want. buymeacoffee.com/from many peoples. Thank you so much for joining me, David.
You're very welcome. Thank you again, as always, for all the work you do finding things for us to talk about and taking care of the editing and the technical stuff. It's always work that I would not be willing to do. So I thank you for being the one to do it.
Yeah, no problem. And thank you to people who have been watching us. Our numbers have been really good on YouTube lately. And thanks for sharing it if you're sharing it and all that stuff.
All right. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Corey.